This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Overnight, the third season of Chef's Table launched on Netflix. That's the series that does deep, lush profiles of chefs around the world. But there's always one thing missing in these shows. You can see and hear, but you can't taste. So people want to go to the actual restaurants, creating a boom in demand. Here to talk about what I'll call the Netflix nudge is Nancy Silverton, the acclaimed baker and chef in Los Angeles who created Pizzeria Mozza and Osteria Mozza. She was also behind La Brea Bakery and Campanile in Los Angeles, sold at a big profit. Profits, we're sorry to note, destroyed during the collapse of the Bernie Madoff fraudulent investment scheme. We'll get to that, but let's first talk cooking. Nancy Silverton, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
When these Netflix people came to you to broach the subject of being featured in this series, did you even have to think about it?
You know, my first reaction was, you know what, this is not something I want to do. I had recently participated or spoke on behalf of a chef, Dominique Cran from San Francisco, and they had asked me to come and speak on her behalf. And so that was easy because it wasn't all about me, and I flew up there and I talked about her, and it was quick and it was fun, and I thought that would be the end. And then I got a call a few weeks later, and they asked if I would also be willing to, you know, sort of be the focus of their next season. And I was really taken aback. I had never seen the Chef Table as of then. And so I said, look, let me watch a couple of these shows and let me see if this is something that I feel comfortable doing. And so I watched, the first one I watched was Francis Melman. And he's a chef who owns an island whose show was just so polished and beautiful, and he had so much to say, and the show just seems so different than anything I felt like I could actually ever pull off. And so my first reaction was, you know what, I can't do this. This is something that I'm just not comfortable doing, just like I'm not comfortable competing in you know, competition shows. You know, it's just not the way that I work.
I know, because the shows, the Chef's Table, the chefs come off like, you know, Abraham Lincoln or Susan B. Anthony. I mean, it's a hero emerges.
Right. And I just didn't see the hero in me. And so I was very reluctant. And they said, please, how can we convince you? Because I think you have a great story. And I was trying to think, what is my story? And they said, don't worry. We find that story, and we tell that story, or we allow you to tell that story. But I was still very hesitant, and I was, you know, I went back and forth, and weighing, you know, should I or should I not? And I thought about my business, and I thought about, you know, being an owner of a business, and our business was already 10 years old, and it's time to bring in new customers. So certainly that was a great way to do it. I talked to the staff a little, and they were so excited to be a part of it. And so I just sort of threw in the towel, and I said, okay, I'll do it.
Are you prepared for what's going to happen once people start streaming this on Netflix? I mean, these mini documentaries are lushly produced, but there's always something missing. You don't actually taste the food that you're seeing, and of course, the viewers want to taste your food, so they come, I mean, they will come rushing to you.
You know, I'm sort of still have my eyes closed. I'm sort of not thinking about it. I hear sort of whispering of, you know, business is going to be crazy. And what I feel, you know, badly about is that starting in the beginning of March, I have to do a little bit of traveling, and I'm not going to be there in the restaurant. I'm going to be in my restaurant in Singapore for a few weeks. And so I feel like all of a sudden the show comes out and people make reservations and they are there to come see me, and I'm not even going to be there for the first couple of weeks in March. So
as you watch this piece, you get a sense of your story, but there's something interesting at the beginning. I would have just assumed that chef or baker is something you always wanted to be. That's not the case.
Wait a second. Did you see the show?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
I have a couple clips. I have a couple clips, and one of the clips I have heard, it's your voice saying, you know, that's not something that you wanted to be.
Well, meaning, you know, I think in today's world, with all of the chef, you know, television shows, and very, you know, young children grow up watching these shows, and by 7 or 8 or 9, they decide that they want to be a chef when they grow up, right? Look, and I'm, you know, 63 now. When I grew up, there was, you know, The Galloping Gourmet and later on a few other TV shows that I didn't watch. But nobody aspired to be a chef in America in my day. So, no, that wasn't something that I ever thought about until I entered college when I started cooking. And I knew as soon as I started cooking in my college dorm that this is what makes me happy. Using my hands, working with food was just something that felt so natural to me. But I still didn't think of chef. I didn't think of the word chef. I thought of the word cook, that this is what I want to do. I want to cook one day.
That's so interesting. What do you think? Why didn't we want to become chefs some years ago? It was seen as, I don't know exactly why. I guess they had a less exalted status. I guess if you came to a fancy restaurant, the chef was still supreme. Something has shifted.
Oh, something shifted a lot especially because I think that chefs, you know, in today's world have reached sort of like a celebrity status. But, you know, back in the 60s, certainly in America, it just wasn't a profession that anybody thought about. You know, you thought about being a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher, you know, an accountant. But it was a very limited sort of amount of professions one thought of when they grew up, you know, growing up. And which is different than Europe, obviously, where there was a lot of people. Someone like Wolfgang Puck at age 14 was already apprenticing in kitchens because it was a, you know, it was a career.
It was a career, exactly. I once profiled for this program, I went to the United Arab Emirates, and there was a young man who was Emirati, and his parents were absolutely convinced that the best job for him was entering the civil service. That's what people should do. He felt he heard the calling. He wanted to become a chef and focus on Emirati cuisine, which he had to actually figure out what that was. And he had to lie to his own parents about what he was doing for a long period. Oh, no, Mom, I'm down at the government office working, and she'd hear plates clanking in the background because it was not seen as high enough status at the time. You know, these things change over time, I guess.
They have, you know, and it's certainly shows like A Chef's Table that are really going to even elevate it that much more.
I have to bring up just briefly a difficult subject. We don't have to delve, but I just want to ask you one thing here. We also cover personal finance on this program. You had a hard lesson 8 years ago. A financial advisor made a decision that lost you millions. Publicly, you were philosophical about it. Are there any, do you think, broader lessons about money that you could share with us, given that experience?
You mean like besides stuffing it under your mattress?
I know. In other words, keep an eye on it, maybe, is one lesson.
Well, I think also my father used to always tell me you need to diversify. And I think that that is really something that's very important with finances, is don't put all your money into what's the phrase? Don't put all your money into one
basket.
Basket. There you go. And I think that's very smart advice. And I think also, you know, anything is risky. And so if you are going to take that risk, I think you have to accept that loss. And I accepted it.
And you weren't living off that money. So you've argued in the past that this whole thing didn't really change your lifestyle.
It didn't, because I didn't live off of it. You know, it came to me in one lump sum, and it came to me because I sold La Brea Bakery. Now, I just want to clarify that I did not receive all of the benefits of that. I received a very small part because there were many people involved. But I did, you know, I did receive a chunk at one time. And so I just sort of put it away and tried to live off the interest. And so it wasn't something, it didn't change my life. And the best part about it was that I had recently started a new restaurant and I had a paycheck. And so it wasn't going to destroy me.
All right, something more fun, practical question. I am descended from real Italians. I use 00 flour, yet my pizza crusts are only okay. They're bready. I could be doing so many things wrong, but I want to ask you, what am I probably doing wrong? What would be your first guess?
When you say that they're very bready, when you say very bready, do you mean sort of just just doughy, that they're
puffy, like Wonder Bready.
You know, what kind of oven are you cooking them in?
It is a standard home oven. It does go to 550 degrees, but it doesn't go higher.
And are you using any kind of a pizza stone or anything like that to give you more bottom heat?
I do have a ceramic pizza stone that's been helping, but that thin crust with the bubbles that my Italian forebears in Naples seem to be able to produce effortlessly eludes me.
You know, it's talking about that, just, you know, 2 days ago at my restaurant, I had who I consider the best pizza maker in the world. His name is Franco Pepe, and he has a pizzeria just outside of Naples called Pepe and Grande. And he too, the pizza at Mozza is not really Neapolitan. It's not that soft, puffy. It's more puffy but crispy. But anyway, mm-hmm. he has this flour that he has milled for him, and it is a 00 flour. So that means it's a very fine. The 00 relates to the granulation of the flour. So it's a very fine, soft flour, and his is really puffy and. But still not doughy. And so I know what you mean, and I think that you're not alone. I think so many of those puffy pizzas just don't get crisp enough, and so they feel so doughy. And so I would just say, if you're using a very high temperature, what you say you are, possibly cut some of the water out of the dough. I don't know. I'd have to see. You know what? You'd have to bring it over for me to analyze it.
It's hard to do a diagnosis over 3,000 miles. It's sort of like going to see the doctor. You may have to be firsthand on that. All right, but you've given me some insights.
But, you know,
this.
I do have a great pizza recipe in my Mozza cookbook. So not my last cookbook, Mozza at Home, but the one before that is called Mozza. And it's a book that's half of the book is on the osteria and the other half is on the pizzeria. And I do feel like I have a great recipe that you may want to try, and it does work with 00 flour, and it is designed for the home oven.
All right. So this weekend, I know exactly what I'm going to be doing. So thank you for that. We'll check it out. All right. So you're ready for this Netflix thing to become available? You've battened down the hatches?
You know, again, I'm just sort of not thinking about it. How about that?
All right. Nancy Silverton, chef, baker, entrepreneur. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, thank you.